We're in the 40th chapter of Ezekiel. Again, I'll read the first four verses, then we'll go on. The 25th year of our captivity, in the beginning of the year, in the 10th day of the month, the 14th year, after that the city was smitten, and the selfsame day the hand of the Lord was upon me and brought me thither. And the visions of God brought he me into the land of Israel, and from Babylon, and set me upon a very high mountain, by which was as the frame of a city on the south. And he brought me there, and behold, there was a man whose appearance was like the appearance of brass, possibly Christ himself, certainly an angelic, at least, being, with a line of flax in his hand and a measuring reed, and he stood in the gate. And the man said unto me, Son of man, behold with thine eyes, and hear with thine ears, and set thine heart upon all that I shall show thee, for to the intent that I might show them unto thee art thou brought here, and declare all that thou seest to the house of Israel. So this divine messenger, evidently after 13 years since his last vision that we ended in chapter 39, now the Lord comes to him again and begins to minister to his heart and carries him to Israel, to Jerusalem, to a high mountain, and shows him this scene in front of him. And again, it's amazing that the Lord, after the chapters that he spoke of his judgment against Israel because of Israel's sin and the surrounding nations, then in his grace showed them the restoration of the nation, a gathering of the Jews from all over the world, and then, of course, a great battle that would take place that obviously is still ahead of us. And then a silence at the end of that battle, and now God once more speaks to Ezekiel and gives him one more grand scene for the hope of Israel to set before them. He says, I'm showing you this, I want you to take note of it, I want you to show it to the nation, I want you to show it to the house of Israel. And it reminds me very much of the scene in Revelation chapter 21 where John says that the angel took him to a great high mountain and showed him the holy city Jerusalem coming down out of heaven as a bride dressed for her husband. And he saw the city coming down, obviously there a spiritual mountain, much like the mountain, I think, in Jesus' temptation, where Satan took him to a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world and all the glory of them, possibly that kind of a mountain here, because he's seeing not only Jerusalem, but Jerusalem in the future, thousands of years ahead of him, with this temple that has never existed yet, that the Jews, the Orthodox Jews today, believe will come down out of heaven when Messiah comes. And it's interesting that the Lord takes the time. I love the way that the Bible ends, that it ends giving us that tremendous picture of the New Jerusalem with all of its beautiful detail and its cities and its walls. And it's almost as though Satan, when he took Christ, he showed him the best of this world. Here is the kingdoms of this world and all of the glory of them. And Satan's still doing that today. And if you'll bow down and worship me, I'll give you all of this. Of course, Christ turned away from that. But Satan still uses the same bait today. So it's as God ends his written record in Revelation 21 and 22, he shows us something that is far grander than anything that Satan could put in front of us. And it says, because of the blessed hope that we have, we live pure, even as he is pure, that it's an incredible thing to set our hearts and our minds on that scene. The last snapshot the scripture gives us before the pages close in Revelation is that place that we are destined for, and how I love that study. Well, for the Jew, no matter where they struggled all over the world, no matter where they were driven and how they were persecuted, to the Jew who studied the scripture in his heart and in his mind, he has a picture of this scene described in Ezekiel, that God is not through with the nation because they will yet realize a kingdom age with the throne of David, and with this scene we see described here with this enormous temple, as we look into it, approximately 900 foot square, over 700,000 square foot, somewhere between 10 and 13 football fields in area. a huge, remarkable scene laid out before Ezekiel to show to the nation, to the Jew. And it's been carried in the heart of the Jew for thousands of years, ever since Ezekiel wrote this down. And as they're gathered now back to the land, how many are looking forward to this scene? He begins in verse 5 to give us a description of it. He says, "Behold," or consider, "a wall on the outside of the house," the temple proper, the wall that surrounds the precincts, "round about, and in the man's hand a measuring reed, and the reed was 6 cubits long," and it says, "by the cubit," King James says here, "the cubit and a handbreadth." So it's what we call the long cubit. In case you're trying to figure this out on your own, please don't use the short cubit. This is the long cubit. The short cubit is 18 inches, a foot and a half. The long cubit, it says here, is the regular cubit and a handbreadth, which is four and a half inches. So we're looking at approximately a 21-inch cubit. I knew you were thinking about that all week, so I want to get that straight before we move on. So the reed is 6 cubits, and it's according to the long cubit, the cubit and the handbreadth. So he measured the breadth of the building, not the building of the temple, but the construction, that is, of the wall. And it says one reed, and the height was one reed. So the wall, all the way around this huge precinct, is 10 foot high and 10 foot wide. It surrounds this 900 foot by 900 foot, approximately, temple area. 10 foot high and 10 foot wide. Then it says, "He came unto the gate which looketh towards the east, and went up the stairs thereof." Now, you've got your maps here. There's a north, south, east, and west. I've got to do something to make this interesting, so stick with me here. You see the gate facing east. That is the first gate we look at, and we get the most details of that gate because it'll tell us as we go to the north gate and the south gate that the measurements are the same. So this is the gate that we begin looking at here in verse 6. He says, "He took me to the gate which looks toward the east, and went up the stairs thereof." Now, you'll see on page 2, the gate, the description of the gate, and you'll see there's stairs coming into the gate. So Ezekiel now is walking up those stairs with this man shining like bronze with the measuring reed, and into this first gate. And he says the gate was one reed broad, about 10 foot wide, and the other threshold of the gate, which was one reed broad. So the threshold about 10 foot. Every little chamber was one reed long and one reed broad. Now you see the gate, you see those little chambers on either side. They're about 10 foot square. I have to keep finding my place here. And between the little chambers, there were 5 cubits. So you see the space between them. That's about 8, 9 foot there. And the threshold of the gate by the porch of the gate was one reed. So the threshold is inside. You see at the top of our gate picture there, the P area. See that area? It says P. Well, that's the inside. That's the porch or the portico of the gate. And it faces inward towards the outer court, which you'll see on page 1. Are we together before we proceed? The porches face inward. You'll see the porch there at the east gate. He measured also, verse 8, the porch of the gate within, one reed. Then measured he the porch of the gate, 8 cubits, and the post thereof, 2 cubits, and the porch of the gate was inward. So the porch and its posts are facing inward. That's what we just said. And the little chambers of the gate eastward were 3 on this side. Those are the ones we looked at. Three on that side. They three were of one measure, and the posts had one measure on this side and on the other. They were equal. And he measured the breadth of the entry of the gate, 10 cubits, and the length of the gate was 13 cubits. So we're looking at an area over 15 foot wide in one direction and 22 foot in the other direction. And the space also before the little chambers was 1 cubit on this side, and the space was 1 cubit on the other side, and the little chambers were 6 cubits on this side and 6 cubits on that side. Got it? I was trying to work through this all day. The little chambers are the A's there that we're looking at on the gate drawing. The little chambers there inside the gate. Page 2. Now this will be interesting. Just stick with me. It picks up. Then he measured the gate from the roof of the one little chamber to the roof of the other, and the breadth of it was 25 cubits against the door. So 25 cubits wide, it seems, is the whole drawing here. That's the 43 foot that is given up the top of the drawing on page 2. And he made also posts of 80 cubits, even unto the posts of the court round about the gate. Take a shot of that yourself. And from the face of the gate of the entrance unto the face of the porch of the inner gate was 50 cubits. The overall length here, 87 foot. From the porch outside to the porch inside, the whole overall length they have here, and using the long cubits in our diagram here, 87 foot. So it's a big gate. This is 43 foot wide, the whole structure, and 87 foot long. That's a interesting gate, because this room here is about that wide, about 43 foot, and we're 100 and some foot long. So this gate we're talking about the size of this room, about the width and the length. So this is an interesting gate. Just to give you an idea of where we are here. You're sitting in one cubit, you're sitting in one chamber, you're sitting in another chamber, you're sitting in another chamber. I'll go all confused by the time we're done this. Verse 16 says, "And there were narrow windows to the little chambers and to their post within the gate round about, likewise to the arches, and the windows were round about inward." They were on the inside, we'll see them. "And upon each post were palm trees." So you see the little A's here on your second drawing, and the idea is those little W's are windows, and carved on the edges of the windows, like the door frame, must be these palm trees looking outward. So this is quite an interesting setup here. Verse 17, we begin to move to the courts. It says here, "Then brought he me into the outer court." Now here we are on page 1. You see the outer court. It goes all the way around. And the outer court is 175 foot wide all the way around. You see that. "He brought me into the outer court, and lo, there were chambers, and a pavement made for the court round about. 30 chambers were upon the pavement." So you see them, all those little R's. You with me on the first drawing there? All those little R's are 30 chambers around the edge, and that little check area is the pavement all the way around. Now, we're not given the purpose of these chambers, though. There's 30 of them. We're not told what they're for. It'll be interesting to find out. In the millennium, when you go to the temple, first thing you want to do is the first thing we don't know in here, study, and you stick your head in one of those chambers and say, "What do they do here?" You know, because these chapters are so exciting that if we have all the details, it would take some of the excitement out of it. So now when you get there, you can ask. Verse 18 says, "And the pavement by the side of the gates, over against the length of the gates, was a lower pavement." So that check area is a little bit lower than the outer court itself. See, now you were reading this all week and you didn't think, I don't have any idea what in the world this is talking about. Here you are, we're in the light already. You've got a whole picture of what this place looks like. Verse 19 says, then he measured the breadth from the forefront of the lower gate. Now, don't get lost here. The forefront of the lower gate on page 2, you'll see that's the porch and it's facing inward. This is hard to understand. It faces in towards the temple, but that's toward the outer court of the temple. So he measured the breadth from the forefront of the lower gate unto the forefront of the inner court. You see the inner court there on page 1? And the gate that goes to the inner court? And you see it? From the east gate across the outer court to the inner court, that's the measurement he's given us here. And that's 100 cubits, he says, eastward or northward, and it's the same southward, from the outside gates on the outside wall to the inside gates going to the inner court. Those are all 175 foot across that courtway there. And the interesting thing of the, one of the interesting things, if you look at these gates, is all of the porches face inward. It's see the gates that the gateways leading to the inner court and the gateways leading to the outer court, the porticos or the porches are all facing inward towards the outer porch. You see the gates are reversed as you look at the drawing. It's interesting. And the gate of the outward court that looked towards the north. Now, we just did the gate of the outward court that looked towards the east. Wasn't that interesting? Now we're going to do the gate of the outward court that looks towards the north instead of the east. He measured the length thereof and the breadth thereof and the little chambers thereof and the three sides, and the three were on this side, and the posts thereof and the arches thereof, and they were the same measurement as the first gate. See, the Holy Spirit has mercy on us here. He says all that stuff was the same as the one you just worked through. Praise the Lord. He doesn't have to take us through that whole thing over again. The length thereof was 50 cubits, and the breadth thereof was 25 cubits. That's our 43 by 87, the size of this room. And their windows and their arches and their palm trees, they were the same as the measurement on the gates that looked towards the east. And they went up unto it by 7 steps. And I don't believe we're given the steps on the first one. It's interesting. We take it for granted they're the same. And the arches thereof were before them. And the gate of the inner court was over against the gate towards the north, towards the east. And he measured from the gate to the gate 100 cubits. That's our measurement across the outer court again. Now he brings us to the gate that faces south, which is just the same as the other two gates we just looked at. And he's just as merciful here, because he'll say the same thing. That's just like the other stuff we just looked at. That brings us to verse 28. See, verse 24 through verse 27, you can just look on here at the south gate, which is exactly as it just gives us the description of everything else we just looked at. So you're getting the picture of this outer court, walls 10 foot high, 10 foot wide. A gate, no gate on the west, but there's a gate, the main gate on the east. There's a gate on the north and a gate on the south. We'll find as we look at the worship that if you enter through the north gate, you have to exit through the south gate. And if you enter through the south gate, you have to exit through the north gate. It's very interesting. The east gate is saved for the prince that will come. This is a very interesting setup. We will get to the worship. But this way, as we get there now, you're going to have an idea of what we're looking at. So we've looked now at the perimeter with the three gates on the outside and crossing the outer court to the temple precinct proper in the middle there now as we look at that. So verse 28 says, and he brought me to the inner court by the south gate, and he measured the south gate according, it just says, according to these measures. And that is according to all the measurements we just look at. The gates that go into the inner court, you'll see them there, gate 2, G2, are exactly the same measurements as the outer gates, is what he's saying. And the little chambers thereof, and the posts thereof, and the arches thereof, according to these measures. And there were windows in it, and the arches thereof round about, and it was 50 cubits along the same thing, same size as this room. and 25 cubits wide, and the arches round about were 5 and 20 cubits long, and the 5 cubits broad, and the arches thereof were towards the utter court. Now, I got you now, don't I? It took me a while to figure out that utter court, because there's no utter court on a drawing. But evidently, if you look on your... Now, this is not where they milk cows. I don't want to hear it. Don't start. You have an outer court, an inner court, and an utter court here. And it seems that the utter court is back by our PC buildings on your first map. See those PC buildings? There is a courtyard back there by those priests' chambers. And it seems like, as he's saying, it faces back that way towards the utter court. And the palm trees were upon the post thereof, and the going up to it had 8 steps. So going up into the inner court, now we have 8 steps. Going up, it seems, into the outer court and through the gates, we have 7. Now we're going up 8 steps into the inner court. And he brought me into the inner court toward the east. And he's going to speak about the east gate of the inner court now. And he measured the gate according to these measures, according to the other measurements we've looked at, and the little chambers thereof, and the posts thereof. He's being very thorough. The arches thereof were according to these measures. There were windows, just like the other ones, and arches, and it was 50 cubits long and 25 cubits wide, same thing. And the arches thereof were towards the outer court. And the palm trees were upon the post at the side and on the other side, and going up it had 8 steps. So he's very clear now as he describes this. First he gave us entering the inner court from the south. Now he gives us from the east. Verse 35, we're looking at the inner court from the north. And you see these 3 gates again on your map. He brought me to the north gate and measured it according to these measures. The little chambers thereof, you could probably say this in your sleep now. The posts thereof, the arches thereof, the windows thereof, the length was 50 cubits, and the breadth was 25 cubits, right. Same size as this room. And the posts thereof were towards the utter court. And the palm trees upon the post thereof, on this side and on the other side, and the going up to it again had 8 steps. So all of these gates towards the inner court, 8 steps. And the chambers and the entries thereof were by the posts of the gates where they washed the burnt offering. Now we're going to look at this in verse 39. We're coming to these offerings now, sin offerings, burnt offerings. And again, there are those who look at this and have trouble with it because it's during the kingdom age. But again, remember that in the Old Testament it said it was impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sin. So those sacrificial system in the Old Testament was an obedience to God. It was harking of the necessity for an innocent substitute to die in our place so we can have life. And they were prophetic. They were looking forward to the coming of Christ. Once Christ came, he instituted the Lord's Supper, and as we remember his sacrifice, we do eat this bread and drink this cup. It says, until he comes. Then the Lord's Supper is eliminated and set aside, and that's interesting because we are the church of the firstborn, the bride of Christ, and we have a peculiar honor from the time of Christ's crucifixion until the rapture of the church. We enjoy a peculiar honor that no other generation in the history of man enjoys. And that is to sit at the Lord's table when we take communion and remember his broken body and his shed blood until he comes. When he comes and sets up his kingdom, again there will be a sacrificial system, but that sacrificial system will be in memorial, looking to what he's already accomplished. Now you have to remember that Paul and James and some of the Jews that were the apostles in the book of Acts, which were in the New Testament and under the New Covenant, still went to the temple and made sacrifice in memorial. They knew what it represented. Paul went there to offer offerings, you remember, as and so forth. He had taken a vow. So there were even some of the very early New Testament believers that were Jews, that were apostles, that still went into the temple and practiced their Judaism, and they knew then that the sacrifices they offered were a memorial or a type of Christ who had died for their sins. So once again, during this age, there will be sacrifices in the precincts looking back to what Christ has already accomplished for them during this age. And again, children born during this age, during the millennium, will have to accept Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior to be born again. And they will have to do it by faith, because they will have to believe that this King who rules the earth with a rod of iron in righteousness and majesty and power, they will have to believe that one day, thousands of years ago, he was beaten and spit upon, and the flesh was ripped off his back, and a crown of thorns were driven upon his head, and he was mocked and nailed to a cross. They'll have to accept that by faith, that he died in their place, just like believers in any age. So we come now to, we're inside the gateways that go into the inner court, and we begin to talk about some sacrifices and look at some tables here in the description of things. It says in verse 39, and in the porch of the gate, now let's look at the gate picture here. You see the porch of the gate, the P there, the portico or the porch, and this is the porch of the inner gate, so it faces out towards the outer court. But within that porch, it says, there were two tables on one side and two tables on the other side to slay thereon the burnt offering and the sin offering and the trespass offering, and at the side without, as one goes up to the entry of the gate, two tables on one side, two tables on the other. That's verses 39 and 40. So if you look at your drawing here and you see this portico, porch area, it's facing out towards the outer court. You have to come up 8 steps to enter into that area. And evidently when you enter into the porch, on your right-hand side there are two tables, hewn tables to slay upon. And on your left-hand side there are two tables to slay upon. And at the bottom of the steps before you went up there were two tables. So at each gate, it seems, there are 8 tables to slay upon. Now this is an interesting description, because as we read in Exodus chapter 20, there is a prohibition of several things. First of all, that when they build an altar, it couldn't be built of hewn stone. It had to be rough stone. They had to take it from the field, and they had to pile it up, and they had to slay their lambs on there. And the idea was they had to understand that man's work had nothing to do with forgiveness. That the altar could not be built of hewn stone. Man did not contribute. It was like Abraham and Isaac, the son and the father had to go alone upon that mountain to settle the issue of human sin. Jesus Christ and his father were alone on Golgotha in one sense, up there on the cross as the sin of the world was judged on Christ. And in the Old Testament, when they built an altar, it was not allowed to be built out of hewn stone, if it was a stone altar. But here we see these table altars are of hewn stone, and there are steps going up to them. Again, in Exodus 20, it said there were not allowed to be steps going up to the altar. It was forbidden, because there were no steps to go to salvation. It says there, lest your nakedness be seen. So the idea is, there are no steps to take. How many people today that you know, that you're trying to share Christ with, that are unbelievers, think that there are steps to heaven? I got to do this step, and I got to do this step, and I got to do that step. Some people think they got to crawl up steps on their knees to a crucifix or some other thing, you know, and they're like, all these steps to heaven. I remember being in the world taking LSD, listening to someone sing about the stairway to heaven. You know, it's like Roby says in his one of the songs on a new album, there is no stairway to heaven, only a bridge divine. But interesting, in this temple area, where to enter into the inner court, the first thing you see are these two hewn tables covered with blood outside. 8 steps, 8 signifying new beginnings. You come into the first porch, and to pass through the gate, which is about as big as this room again, on either side there are two hewn tables and blood upon them. And entering into the inner court, again you're looking and you're realizing it's only through the blood of Christ. All those worshipers will realize that we can come into the presence of God, that we can come into the inner area. And again, I think as believers, how often do we have to be reminded that we can only enter into His presence by what He's accomplished? Sometimes we think, you know, He's more happy to see me this week because I was better this week when I was last week. And it's, you know, I get four kids at home and they have weeks up and down. And I'm just as glad to see them every week. It has nothing to do with that. And when the Father looks at us in a good week, He sees Jesus Christ. When He looks at us in a bad week, He sees Jesus Christ. We look the same in a good week and a bad week because of what was accomplished on Calvary. And as they come into worship, they have to pass through this area where there are these hewn tables covered with the blood of sacrifices to enter in. I think, what an amazing scene that will be. And people will be coming from every nation of the world. Don't forget that. The Bible tells us that 10 men of other nations will take hold of the skirt of a Jew and say, teach us about the Lord, take us to His presence. You've got to understand that. Russians, Arabs, Jews, Americans, South Americans, Canadians, Germans, Africans, Indians, Asians, from every nation coming and passing through those bloody hallways to see the King. What an amazing day, what an amazing scene that will be. Verse 41 says, four tables were on this side and four tables on that side by the side of the gate. 8 tables were whereupon they slew their sacrifices. And the 4 tables were of hewn stone for the burnt offering, of 1.5 cubits long, 1.5 cubits broad, and 1 cubit high, whereupon also they laid the instruments wherewith they slew the burnt offering and the sacrifice. And within were hooks, 1 hand broad, fastened round about upon the tables was the flesh of the offering. So it says they had the instruments there they used for the slaughter, much like in the Old Testament. And without the inner gate, now if you look on page 1, page 1, you see our RP areas there? That is when you came outside the inner gate. When you come into the courtyard, into the inner court, you have that on the north and on the south, that RP area listed there. That's what we're looking at in verse 44, chambers for priests and singers. And those are huge areas. It says, without the inner gate were the chambers of the singers, so there's going to be music there in the inner court, which was at the side of the north gate, and their prospect was facing towards the south. So you see the one on the north, the RP, what it says is it's facing south. See that, the doorway? And it says, and the other side of the east gate was the one that had its prospect facing north. So it says on either side of this east gate to the inner court are these rooms for the singers and priests, and the north one faces south, and the south one, the doorway, faces north. And he said unto me, this chamber whose prospect is toward the south, so we're looking at the one on the north side of the east gate facing south, the RP area there, this prospect is towards the south. It's for the priests and the keepers of the charge of the house. So that one is for the priests and singers who are in charge of keeping the area of the temple and the house. The one on the south, it says, verse 46, the chamber whose prospect is towards the north, but it's on the south, is for the priests, the keepers of the charge of the altar. So these are for the priests in charge of sacrifice. And interesting, these are the sons of Zadok. Now you should have reference in your Bible to 1 Kings at least. Among the sons of Levi. So God is still identifying the priesthood there. Amazing, even in the millennium. And to function as a priest, you still have to have Levi genes, even in the millennium. Can't resist that when you go through there. But the sons of Zadok, among the sons of Levi, which come near to the Lord to minister unto him. So it gives us, you know, the chambers and who functions in them and what that function is for. Amazingly, as we look at these two chambers. So he measured the court 100 cubits long. Now we're looking now at the entire court, the inner court. And you see, you have to turn this upside down to see it, but you see it's 175 foot long from the inside of the inner court all the way to the back of the temple. And that's what it's giving us here. He measured the court. It's 100 cubits long and 100 cubits broad, 4 square, and the altar that was before the house. So this initial inner court is 175 by 175 here, square. When you're drawing, the altar is right, the main altar right in the middle of it. Verse 48 says this, and we're coming to the temple proper now as we come to verse 48. And he brought me to the porch of the house. Now I think we might be on drawing 3. Is everybody with me? Drawing 3. You know, I'll tell you, this is just a whole lot more fun than just reading through these cubits. You know, it just... You see the area down the bottom at the top of the steps, E there? You see that E area? Everybody with me? Millennial Temple proper, E. That's where he's entering into at this point in time. In verse 48, he brought me to the porch of the house. That's the porch, that inner porch of the house there. And measured each post of the porch, 5 cubits on this side, 5 cubits on that side, giving the width there. And the breadth of the gate was 3 cubits on this side and 3 cubits on that side, measuring the shorter gate there. You see in the front that goes into the porch. And it seems, as you look at this, you'll notice that each, on your temple drawing here, temple proper, each entrance gets narrower as it goes in. See it? The outside one here, you see, you can just look at it and see how wide. It's 24 foot 5. The next one's 17 foot 5. And the very one that goes into the most holy place is 10 foot 5. It's interesting that it gets narrower as it goes inward. Verse 49 says, the length of the porch was 20 cubits and the breadth was 11 cubits. And he's given it to us that way because he's looking at it facing east. So the width and the length is actually the breadth, and the breadth is actually the length. But if you turn it sideways and look at it facing east, he's right. But we just have to understand what he's looking at. Do you get me there? you know, the word orientation means to get your bearings by facing east. If you face east, you're oriented. And that's how you get your bearings, by facing east. That's the origin of the word. And it's interesting, too, but just as an aside, everybody who lives on this side of Jerusalem writes from right to left towards Jerusalem, and everybody who lives on the other side writes from right to left towards Jerusalem. It's just an interesting, I don't know why, but it seems to work that way. It doesn't have anything to do with our study. The length of the porch was 20 cubits. And he's saying length because he's looking at the temple going sideways. So he's the length is 20 and the breadth he gives us here now is 11. And he brought me by the steps whereby they went up to it, and there were pillars by the post. Now you see on your drawing there those 2 black circles. Those are the pillars. You see where we're at. Ezekiel is getting this guided tour, and one day you're going to walk there. And you're going to say, those were the 2 black spots on our drawing. One on this side and one on the other side. You remember in Solomon's temple, there were 2 pillars, Boaz and Jacinth, to prosper and to strengthen. These 2 pillars here, too. Afterward... We can do this chapter in 5 minutes, no problem, because we got the drawings. Well, see, 40, 41, and 42 give us this area. Then as we get into 43 to 46, we're going to look at the worship. 47 and 48 give us the division of the land. So this evening, if we finish chapter 41, we get the idea of the whole parameters and everything that was going on. Afterwards, he brought me to the temple and measured the post 6 cubits broad on the other side, 6 cubits broad on the other side, which was the breadth of the tabernacle. Now, in the King James, they throw that whammy in there. He just happens to mention, because he's a priest, as he takes these measurements, he must think, huh, that's the same width as a tabernacle. And it tacks on the end of the verse, and everybody's scratching their heads. What in the world is he talking about? And it doesn't sound like the measurement of the tabernacle, but remember, these are the long cubits. So you have to transpose them to understand what he's talking about. You'll all do that as soon as you get home, I know. And the breadth of the door was 10 cubits. Let me see these doors again. The sides of the door were 5 cubits on this side, 5 cubits on the other side. And he measured the length thereof 40 cubits. And the breadth was 20 cubits. So you were looking at our OS area here on your temple drawing. See it? Which is 40 by 20. That's the dimensions he's giving us. And now that is the outer sanctuary. The little square up the top with the IS, the is on it, that is the Holy of Holies, or the inner sanctuary, the most holy place. So we're looking at this. And the thing that's interesting, in verse 3 it says, then went he inward and measured the post of the door of the 2 cubits. In verse 3, Ezekiel's guide is going into the IS, the inner sanctuary, and Ezekiel doesn't enter. He stands outside. Now, he's trained as a priest, and he knows only at Yom Kippur was the high priest allowed to go into the most holy place. So he says, and he went in and measured. He must be yelling out the measurements to Ezekiel. He's standing outside. So he went in and measured the post of the door, 2 cubits, and the door, 6 cubits, and the breadth of the door, 7 cubits. So he measured the length thereof, 20 cubits, and the breadth thereof, 20 cubits, before the temple. And he said unto me, this is the most holy place. So you can see it's 20 by 20 cubits. You can see it's a square there, 35-foot square. Up there, the IS. And Ezekiel evidently is still standing in OS, getting the dimensions from his divine friend here. Now, verses 5 to 11, you need a bottle of aspirin to get through. And especially the way the King James writes it out. And I'll tell you what it is. And you can see it here. It's talking about the CRSRs on our Millennial Temple proper. It's a description of the SRs. What do you mean, oh my God? Somebody said, oh my God. He wrote it. He wants us to know this. We're not going to describe every SR. We're giving you an SR overview, so calm down. Now, the interesting thing about these SRs is there are 30 of them on a level, and they are 3 levels high. So there's 30 on each level, and there are stairs going from level to level. You kind of see the S drawn in there, the stairs. But the interesting thing is, because the, and you'll read it in your translation, if it's New King James or NIV, it's a little easier to understand, but it seems that the temple walls go up, they step in, then they go up and they step in again. So the interesting thing with these rooms is the second story room is a little wider than the first story room because it's built onto that step in. And the third story room is the widest one because it's built into where the temple steps in again. As we get over to our, look back to page one. As we get over to our PC areas, and I know you can't wait to get there. As we get to the PC areas, the interesting thing is it's opposite. The wider room is on the bottom, and it steps up and gets thinner each time. So it's just remarkable to look at this, that God's got this figured out, where we have these two of the PC room and the rooms outside the temple, one of them's getting wider as it goes up, and the other one's getting narrow as it goes up. It's very, very interesting the way this, to me anyway, the way this is drawn out here. So let's jump into verse 5, and the King James will mix you up here. After he measured the wall of the house, 6 cubits, and the breadth of every side chamber, 4 cubits round about the house on every side. And the side chambers were 3, one over another, so it was 3 stories, and 30 in order, 30 on each level. And they entered into the wall, which was of the house, for the side chambers round about, that they might have hold. The idea is they were built into the walls, it stepped up, that they might have hold. But they had not hold in the wall of the house, but on the wall of the house. You're going to get confused about this. And I just want to read verse 7 in the King James, because this has to be one of the most amazing verses in the Bible. You just listen to it. Close your eyes, just listen to verse 7. And there was an enlarging and a winding about, still upward, to the side chambers, for the winding about of the house went still upward, round about the house. Therefore the breadth of the house was still upward, and so increased from the lowest chamber to the highest by the midst. Now that's what I just told you in English. There's a winding, it winds around, and there's stairs going up, and each time it steps up, it steps in, and the room gets a little wider. That's verse 7 in English. I love the King James sometimes. I saw also the height of the house round about. The foundations of the side of the chambers were a full reed, so there were 10-foot border all around the bottom. That's what he's saying. The thickness of the wall, which was for the side chamber without, was 5 cubits. The wall was 5 cubits thick. And that which was left was the place of the side chambers that were within. So there was room then within inside the walls, it tells us. And between the chambers was the wideness of 20 cubits round about the house on every side. So the width inside from the chamber to the inside of the OS and IS, he's giving us as 20, the walk all the way around the side. And the doors of the side chambers were toward the place that was left, leaving, I think is what it means, on the door towards the north and on the door towards the south. The breadth of the place was, the breadth of the place that was left was 5 cubits round about. So you can figure that out for yourself. Now, the building that was before the separate place at the end toward the west was 70 cubits broad, and the wall of that building now is 5 cubits thick again. These are thick walls, round about, and the length was 90. So you have a building now 70 by 90, and you've got to go back to page 1 to look at this building. And it is building B, all the way on the left. That's west. Remember, we're oriented here. And that building is 157 foot wide and 122 foot deep. And it's not there. We have no designation for it. You know, that's 3 times the size of this room, and they didn't tell us what goes on in there. So this is definitely a room, when you get to this temple, you want to stick your head in there and say, what goes on in this big room? Is it's huge. And you see it there. It's room B on our drawing. That's what we're speaking of. We have the cubits here, but you've got the feet on your drawing. So he measured the house. We're getting the overall measurement now of the temple. Verse 13. Hang on, we're almost through. So he measured. Now you see, but imagine if we had just come here tonight and just read these chapters. And really, this is kind of fun, because we get to see what it looks like and you get an idea. And how many churches do you think in America have taken the time to study these last 8 chapters of Ezekiel and try to get the congregation to understand, knowing that we're headed there someday and we don't want to be like a bunch of hicks walking around in Jerusalem? Okay. We took our Bible study seriously. We've got to trust God to take these chapters seriously, believe we're going to be there someday, so we want to see what it's going to look like. He's taken a lot of time to give us great detail, and for those who have eyes of faith, for those who believe, who can look at this and think, he wanted us to know about this. I mean, there's tremendous detail here, so it's kind of fun to have the drawings to encourage us along, because just reading through is... See, the people who didn't come tonight thought we were just going to read through. So we measured the house, the temple proper, 100 cubits, 175 foot long. You'll see the drawings measured on your drawing. The separate place in the building with the walls there of 100 cubits long. Also, the breadth of the face of the house and the separate place towards the east, 100 cubits. And he's giving us the measurements of these buildings we just looked at overall. And he measured the length of the building over against the separate place, which was behind it, and the galleries thereon, the one side on the other side, 100 cubits, with the inner temple and the porches of the court. And let me see. He's giving us now, I think, measurements again of our PC areas. They have the same length there that we're looking at. Verse 16, the doorposts and the narrow windows and the galleries round about on their three stories over against the door, sealed with wood round about and from the ground up to the windows, and the windows were covered. To that above the door, even to the inner house, and I think we're looking at the temple again, and without, and by all the wall round about within and out by measure. And the idea is there's wood inside our PC areas and there's wood inside of our temple again. Interesting. And it was made with cherubims and palm trees, so that the palm tree was between a cherub and a cherub. So between every set of cherubim, there's a palm tree, and every cherub... Now, this is interesting. Every cherub had two faces. You know, as we've been studying cherubim, they have four faces. The face of a lion, the face of an ox, the face of a man, and the face of an eagle. Here in the kingdom age, the cherubim's only got two faces left. Well, I think that's interesting. So that the face of a man was towards the palm tree on the one side, and the face of the lion toward the palm tree on the other side, so it made through all the house round about. Now, the interesting thing is, the other two faces of the cherubim, the face of the ox, portrayed Christ the servant. He's no longer the servant. He's the lion of the tribe of Judah. And the face of the eagle portrayed his deity, but he's there amongst them as a man. So it's interesting to look at the cherubim reflecting his glory during this age, have the face of a man and the face of the lion. He's taken his kingship on the earth. It's just remarkable to me to look at this. And if this is your first night here and you just got saved, Sunday's better for you. We'll be in Daniel after this. That's good. And it says, from the ground unto above the door were cherubims and palm trees made on the wall of the temple. The posts of the temple were squared and the face of the sanctuary. The appearance of the one was as the appearance of the other. They squared off the entrances and so forth in the inside of the sanctuary. Now, verse 22 is the only piece of furniture described in this whole complex. Now, you remember in the tabernacle in Solomon's temple, you had the menorahs, you had the table of showbread, you had the altar of incense. Interesting, we have this one lone table of wood. And that's interesting. The altar of wood was 3 cubits high, and the length thereof 2 cubits, and the corners thereof, and the length thereof, and the walls thereof were of wood. It's approximately 5 foot high and 3 foot wide. And it was all made of wood. And he said unto me, this is the table that is before the Lord. So instead of the, as we go into the inner sanctuary, is the outer sanctuary, and then the most holy place, there's no veils. There's double doors instead. Double folding doors instead of veil. And the one piece of furniture in there is this table of wood, and it says it's the table that's before the Lord. It's most like the table of incense, which signified prayer, but it doesn't give us information about it. It just gives us the dimensions and tells us it's the table that is before the Lord. Now, that's amazing to me as we go and see him there, what function this table will have in our concourse with him as we commune with him and talk with him, this one wooden table. And the temple and the sanctuary had two doors, double doors to the inner and outer sanctuary. The doors had two leaves apiece, two turning leaves. They swung, two turning leaves. Two leaves for the one door, two leaves for the other door. And there were made on the doors of the temple the cherubim, which had been on the veil. Now they're on the doors, and the palm trees, like as were made upon the walls. And there were thick planks upon the face of the porch without. And there were narrow windows and palm trees on the one side and on the other side, on the sides of the porch and upon the side chambers of the house, thick planks. Now, you just made it through Ezekiel 41, 40, 41, and 42 and got to hand it to you because these are some of the toughest chapters in the Bible. But we get an idea of what this whole scene is looking like and the doors, the double doors that take us into the sanctuary and then the inner sanctuary. And it's interesting to see throughout palm trees and cherubim with two faces. The palm tree signified the Feast of Tabernacles, which is the one mandatory feast during the millennium. We find out in Zechariah. So it's interesting in all of this, and I'm sure as we go there and we know fully, even as we have been fully known, what beauty we'll behold and what mystery of God's wisdom will be reflected in all of these things. There is no gold and no silver in this temple. And you remember in Solomon's temple, the inside was cedar overlaid with pure gold. When you went into that temple, the walls were pure gold with jewels set in them. The ceiling was pure gold with jewels set into it. The walls four square, pure gold. And it says that when the glory of the Lord entered that place, that the priests fell down outside. They couldn't even enter. Again, it must have looked like a big flashlight shining out the front door with all those gold and jewels and the glory of the Lord inside reflecting and refracting around and shooting out the front door of the temple. There was smoke and there was brilliant light coming out with all the gold and jewels reflecting on the inside, and the priests couldn't even enter. They laid there. They couldn't even get near it. And yet here, all the glory belongs to the one who will be seated there. All of the gold, which is symbolizes deity and purity and holiness, all of the silver that symbolizes redemption and salvation, will belong to him. There will be no other thing that reflects glory, because all glory, the Bible tells us, belongs to him. And he will be there. So there would be no gold or silver or jewel that would draw our attention, even if it was there. Because it says, Lord, you are more precious than silver. Lord, you're more costly than gold. You know, he himself will be there, who is the gold and the silver and the precious gem of the universe.